This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Beyond Civility Project allows citizens and civic leaders to meet and explore the barriers and the bridges to effective dialogue. At Beyond Civility's back-to-back programs, high-profile advocates of opposing positions on an issue agree to present the case for the other side's views. It's not an easy thing to do, but it does help foster understanding and respect. Beyond Civility's next back-to-back program tomorrow evening addresses relations between police and the African-American community. And joining us to discuss policing and the African-American experience and the Beyond Civility Initiative are Church of the Living God Pastor Ennis Tate, Beyond Civility Moderator Patty Foster, and Cincinnati Police Department Executive Assistant Police Chief Lieutenant Colonel Dave Bailey. You can join us, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Patty, Colonel Bailey, and Ennis, thank you so much for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Patty, tell us about the mission of Beyond Civility.
Beyond Civility started because, as you described, sometimes it's a challenge to see across the other side of a debate. People think that they're good at hearing facts and changing their mind and developing opinions, but what we're finding is that people aren't very good at that at all. People have very set opinions sometimes, and they listen with a view towards supporting their own opinion more often than changing their own opinion. So we have set up a couple of different formats. As a way to open people's minds, we're hoping to create a more civil dialogue, a more civil debate, in order for people to understand better social positions, political positions, and to perhaps for the first time hear that there is another side to this debate. We're not necessarily trying to change minds, we're trying to open them.
And hence the name Beyond Civility. You're trying to go just beyond just being civil and expand on that.
Exactly. So Beyond Civility was started by a couple of very well-respected mediators in town, B. Larson and Bob Rack. The conveners were Judge Beth Myers and Judge Timothy Black, and they all started with this shared mission, and they were looking for ways to make people's minds more open and to create this environment where we could discuss very polarizing topics in a more collaborative way. Thankfully, we've had some other great programs. We call these back-to-back programs because what we do is we take on a highly charged topic and we get two representatives who represent each side or different sides of that topic, and we ask them to enter each other's shoes and to have a debate or a conversation about that topic speaking for the other person. What we found is this creates just a little bit of cognitive dissonance in a way that makes the words you're not expecting to hear come out of the mouth of the person you trust, because people tend to arrive in these situations knowing who they trust and expecting to believe what that person has to say. So when you hear the other side of a topic come out of that person's mouth, sometimes you hear it in a whole new way. We've had Jennifer Branch and Chris Finney talk about highly charged topics like the Hobby Lobby decision and how religious freedoms interact with women's rights to choose. We had David Singleton on stage along with Joe Dieters talking about the death penalty. In each of those cases, they took the opposite point of view from the one they would expect. They answered questions, very probing questions about those topics, and they had to keep speaking as the other person would until you could turn to that other presenter and say, how did they do? And the answer is supposed to be, I couldn't have said it better myself.
Have you ever been involved in one of these before, Colonel Bailey?
No.
Okay.
So I don't know what to expect going in, but it sounds very interesting.
Okay. How are you preparing for this?
I looked at some of the topics, and I got to say, I told her before I came in, I'm like, there's no softballs here. Very complex issues. So I go back and look at what's happened on the national level, get myself up to speed on what's been going on, and try to assume the role of Pastor Tate, which I don't know if I can do, but I'm certainly going to try.
Reverend, how do you feel about it? Is this the first time you've done one of these?
This is the first time I've done it.
Okay,
yes,
so both of you are brand new to this.
Yes, we are.
How in the world did they land both of you? Did they just ask and you said, sure, we'll do this? Or?
Well, yeah, one of the great things is, as both Colonel and I are partners, we work together in the community. And so our views of these subject matters tend to line up with where we hope to see the relationship between police and the African-American community go. And that's a positive, very productive relationship.
Yeah, that is one thing that I think both of you have a common goal here. You want to see good relations with the African American community.
Yeah, you know, 16 years ago, I was one of the ones that was in charge of implementing some of those initiatives in the collaborative agreement. So that's been part of my police life for many, many years. And I really do understand. I think a lot of police departments are starting to understand the real key to change is really doing a lot of partnership things with the community and impacting some long-lasting initiatives to really build communities and build that trust. That's what's going to help us with the crime.
And how tough is it to take on the other side's position?
It's a skill. It's a skill, and we seek people who we think are up to that skill and up to the challenge, and people who are well known for representing a certain opinion within the community. So Pastor Tate, very well known in the community, obviously, and in the African American community especially. Colonel Bailey, with his years working on the collaborative and in the police department, we trust them to be able to know both sides of this topic and to be able to play the role from the other side than the one they would normally play. I also want to thank them both for doing this because it's not easy. We ask a lot of our presenters. We have also been very well rewarded in that we ask our presenters after this experience, how was it? And to a man, every person has said they read things they wouldn't otherwise have read. They thought about things in a way they might not have previously thought about them. And we ask our audience members what impact it has had on them to watch this debate play out. And I would say consistently they say they've developed new respect for both presenters. They respect their ability to think in new ways and to help them understand this topic in new directions.
Reverend, have you done anything special to get ready for this?
I have. I've listened to different news broadcasts that may have already played and gone back to listen to some of the details of the incident involving police and African Americans. I've tried to reference books that I know that have been written about the sensitivity of the relationship between police and African Americans, just to make sure that my perspective, as well as lean on the relationship that I've had with the police department for the past 9 years, understanding what the goal is from their perspective.
So nationally, there has been a lot of tension between African Americans and the police. How are we doing in Cincinnati, though? I mean, what do you think of relations here?
I think because of the commitment of the collaborative and the commitment of both the police department and those involved in the collaborative, because of the intentionality of making it work and committing to being at the table. Even though Judge DeLotte and the mandate required us to talk and to work together, I think we've gone beyond that. And I think we're working together. There's still some areas that we have to work now, but we're moving in a better direction than most cities.
Yeah, I think, if you could call it a benefit, we've been at this for 15 or 16 years as far as the collaborative goes. And I could tell you, I went out to San Diego for the Major City Police Chiefs Conference. And really, when you boiled it down, the question in the room was, what's going on nationally? Why are all these things happening? And I think at the end of that conversation, we lost touch with our clients. The expectations of police are far different than what they were years ago. And we really do do business different.
Explain a little bit to Colonel Bailey, since you were involved. What is that collaborative agreement? What's it designed to do?
The collaborative agreement was designed to do a few things. It speaks to police reforms. That would have been the memorandum of agreement with the Department of Justice that's rolled into the collaborative. A lot of times when you hear about reform packages for cities, you hear just outside of it. What police reforms are going to take place? How are you going to change the police department? Judge DeLotte took it a step further. Yes, let's bring the best practices to the police department, but also let's speak to how that interaction is going to look between the police and the greater community. What's that look? So the rest of the collaborative speaks to our Citizen Complaint Authority. How's that going to help police achieve its mission? Problem-solving policing. All those things are rolled into the collaborative to speak to how's that productive interaction going to look, and that's what guides us through long-lasting change.
You think that what Cincinnati has is unique in terms of that agreement? Is it something that other police departments should strive for as well?
I think so. You know, when it first was implemented here, I think there was a lot of growing pains. How are we going to do this? Is it the right thing? I think when Cincinnati went through that transformation within the police department, I think one day we sat in a room and said, we got to change the way we do business. What we're doing now just simply isn't working. Let's go with this. And you got to remember, too, the Fraternal Order of Police was a partner in this. They bought into the collaborative agreement. So we had all the major entities saying, yeah, we need to change the way we do business. And I think it was very impactful. I think the principles still are good today. Maybe refresh some things. You know, the policing world's changed, technology's changed, but those principles still are very good, sound principles to guide that interaction today, I believe.
Reverend, what do you think in terms of the uniqueness of that agreement?
I think to the Colonel's point, it was really an opportunity for us to go internally. The police department went inside its agency and began to look at ways to really improve. And then I think for the African-American community, we've had some very huge transformations ourselves. We got some great soldiers on the ground that are still working. The Damon Lynch's the Third, the Iris Rowleys, those individuals who are committed to this work and they are in the community. They're having conversations to ensure that people are being educated about the collaborative, because a lot of times we just talk about it without being educated about what it's really accomplishing or what it was designed to accomplish. And that's been the important factor.
Like Beyond Civility, is one of the keys to better relations, more social interactions between the police and the community at the street level and getting to know each other better? And
that's just a small part of it. Really respecting the fact that police are there to protect us and not to hurt us. We're not their prey. And we have to really turn our minds away from the negativity of how we've interacted with police or how the relationship with police over the years, and look for ways to be able to improve our relationships, and those community partnerships are one of those ways.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Patty, what's the format like once you get into one of these back-to-backs? Is it a debate? Do they give a speech? How exactly does that work?
It's a question and answer session, and we have been thinking long and hard and spending lots of time creating probing questions. We're not shooting softballs here. These guys will attest to that. We finally just showed them the final questions. But we're anticipating that there are people in that room, the audience members who have come in, who might need to be educated. They might have a very set mindset. They might not be very open-minded, especially about this topic. That these gentlemen have done a great job in Cincinnati. They've done so many great things. But as you've said, there are challenges because nationally this is a topic, and it's a very charged topic with high emotions, and it involves people's safety and people's concerns that are legitimate. So we basically create these questions assuming that people will come in with strong points of view, and we want to hear each of these gentlemen speak as their opposite presenter would about real topics and highly charged topics. You know, how does that feel for someone in the black community to interact with a white police officer? How does it feel for a policeman to walk into a situation not knowing whether or not they're going to be safe at the end of this encounter? So we get right to the crux of it, and we ask each of these gentlemen to use their skill to imagine what the other would say and what that community would say. So yeah, we've been creating some tough questions for these guys.
How long does this last?
It's a 2-hour program. I want to say it starts at 5:30. We have a reception to start. And by the way, anyone's invited. Anybody can make a reservation, and I urge you to do this. It's free. You come and you get treated to a reception to begin with, where everyone gets a chance to chat and get to know some new people. Then we sit down for the presentation. The format is that we give a brief introduction. We talk about Beyond Civility and our mission and what we're there to achieve. We then do what we consider to be a fairly important part of this process, which is we ask each of these gentlemen to describe themselves with just 3-minute introduction. Where do you come from? What? Describe your family. Describe some of your mentors. How did you get to this place in your life? How did you get to these points of view that you currently hold? And they answer those as themselves. But that's just a way to open people's minds, get people to know the person behind the uniform or the person behind the title, and hopefully get everyone into that slightly more open-minded mindset. And then off we go. We just start asking questions, you know, alternating them and hoping to probe into some pretty emotive topics.
Sounds like there's a lot of detail in this.
There's a lot of detail. There's a lot of research, and I don't know if it's fortunate or unfortunate, but boy, the national news keeps providing us with new things that we need to address, new questions to ask about, new specific instances that we would like them to comment on.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation, and let's talk to Dale in Latonia. Hi, Dale.
Hi, Mark. Thanks. I was a Cincinnati police cadet from 1976 to 78. And in the academy, that's where Cincinnati State is now, we were trained with respect to force with equal force. Now I'm 60 years old, and I travel a lot across the country. I've been tasered once, and I've actually had a gun pulled on me when I was sleeping in my camper truck in North Dakota by a policeman. And I'm wondering what happened. Now I've been told that the academies train force to overcome any force. And when I was a cadet, we were drilled force with equal force. Guy comes at you with a knife, you use your baton or your mace. You don't use your gun. And now today, I think things have gone awry. And I was listening to your program quickly, and I remember working for the Cincinnati Police Department. I was kind of laid off. There was a budget cut. But I was working at District 1 with the Community Relations Department with a policeman named Jack somebody. And we did phone calls, just random. I had the phone book. I was just calling people in the phone book in Cincinnati, asking them what they thought of the force. I'll take my comment off the air, and nice program.
Okay, thank you, Dale. What about use of force training? Is there anything different nowadays than there was in the past? Or?
Well, certainly there's been a lot of new tools. The taser has offered more options. If you look at the law, the police have the right to or the responsibility to overcome resistance, enough force to overcome their resistance, and as our policy says, and no more. That hasn't changed. That's grounded in two court cases, Graham versus Connor and Tennessee versus Gardner speaks to lethal force. So those haven't changed in many, many years. But training is just to overcome that resistance and no more.
And he mentioned they used to actually call people and say, how are we doing? What level of community outreach is there on the police department these days? I mean, you've got social media and all kinds of ways you can reach out to the public.
You know, not so much telephones anymore.
Yeah.
A lot of it is social media. In fact, we have our Sergeant Eric Franz heads up our social media team. We're now upping our anti-net game. We're really trying to increase our interaction with social media so we can get some of his comments to continuously improve. So we do get plenty of comments. They come in every day, and we do try to address all those.
What do you see as being the challenges of police community relations in Cincinnati?
You know, I think when I came on 30 years ago, policing was very simple. You have a toolbox of one tool. You know, you're going to arrest your way out of this problem. I think we've seen over the years that's not going to work. Warehousing folks don't work. I think what there is promise in is, and I was talking to Pastor Tate about this earlier, you have to build communities. You basically, yes, we go out to the folks that we believe are causing the violence, and there still is arrest, and there's still places and those sort of strategies that we look at. But at the end of the day, long-term impact is going to be having partnerships and building communities to build those guardians, the anchors, and mentors in the community and foster that idea that, hey, we're on the move. We don't want crime here. This is not the place that's going to happen. And you kind of self-police. So that's the goal we're trying to get to. I think all of us want to get there. What kind of investment we need? How do we rebuild communities? That's where the promise is going to lay.
Reverend Tate, what about you? Where do you see?
Awesome. And building those relationships, again, trying to maximize the work that we've done in the African American community to get to where we are now, keeping those influencers out front, talking to our children about options and direction, using intervention and prevention to really work from our youngest to as they matriculate, get older. We want to make sure that we're just reinforcing the message about violence and the options to live a different life than the one that they may be surrounded by or be influenced by.
What do you hope comes out of this session that you're going to have tomorrow evening?
One is for me as a black man with three black sons, I want for my sons to have a better outlook on what having a relationship with police is all about, what the new norm is and what the realities are. I'm bringing my sons intentionally so that they can hear with their own ears what it's expected of them from their father's perspective, but also watch their father having a positive relationship and interacting with the police.
What are you hoping comes out of it?
Kind of what I've always said, that people understand that we're in this together, and this is not just police issues. I think, you know, I look at my career and I consider today and say, you know what, These are not police issues. We're not going to roll the Ray truck in and indict communities and take people off in warehouse. I mean, it didn't work. It really didn't provide safety for long periods of time. There's better ways to foster that. So I hope people understand it. Really, the police do understand. We understand that there are better ways to get the job done, and we're committed to that. I hope people understand that policing is changing, not just here in Cincinnati, but we see it across the country. These departments are starting to realize we have to do things better. There's an easier way in doing business. And, you know, going into communities, having rocks and bottles thrown at the police, that's just not a way to get things done. It's not safe. It doesn't produce outcomes. And we need to get away from that.
And Patty, overall, what kind of impact do you think Beyond Civility's had on the community?
I hope it's positive. We get good reviews from the people who have come to see us. It's hard to measure because we are counteracting a very strong human instinct, which is called confirmation bias. People form their opinions young in life, and they tend to look for ways to reinforce those opinions rather than to open their minds. So we hope that with this program, we're breaching the social divide. We're breaching the political divide to some extent. We are trying to counteract that confirmation bias with, like I said, that that dissonance that just makes you rethink things or see another point of view in a new way. And we also are aware that, you know, there are big national issues going on. This tends to be a national conversation that pushes us to a more polarized point of view. By keeping it local and making it local and inviting people in to watch these two gentlemen do a fine job of what they've been describing today, working as partners, it's very powerful.
Give us the details for tomorrow's event.
Tomorrow's event is, hold one second, let me find those for you. I know that you can sign up to come at beyondcivility.org if you press on the button that says reservations. It is going to take place at the New Prospect Baptist Church. The title of the program is Black and Blue, Policing and the African-American Experience. It's tomorrow night, Tuesday, April 18th. The reception starts at 5:30, and the program itself starts at 6:30 and should wrap up by 8:15.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Church of the Living God Pastor Ennis Tate, Beyond Civility Moderator Patty Foster, and Cincinnati Police Department Executive Assistant Police Chief Lieutenant Colonel Dave Bailey. Again, Beyond Civility is presenting the back-to-back program Black and Blue, Policing and the African-American Experience, tomorrow evening, and you can find a link to more information about that at WVXU.org.